You're listening to Now I've Heard Everything, conversations with the icons of our time.
People really didn't get to know who I am, and they just saw this mischaracterization painted by the media and by some of my own self-inflicted wounds, which are that stupid ad.
Former U.S. Senate candidate Christine O'Donnell, today on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson. You know, sometimes we say something stupid, and it comes back to haunt us years later. Now, that can be especially a problem if you're running for elected office. In 2010, Christine O'Donnell, in her third campaign, rode the Tea Party wave to a surprise upset victory and won the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate from Delaware. And then, something stupid from her past came back to haunt her. You see, a decade earlier, Christine O'Donnell had appeared on Bill Maher's TV show and had admitted that she had once dabbled in witchcraft.
I dabbled into witchcraft. I hung around people who were doing these things.
And before long, that was almost all that some people knew about Christine O'Donnell, was that she had said she was once a witch. Well, against her own better judgment, she says, she made a TV commercial in which she proclaimed,
"I'm not a witch. I'm nothing you've heard. I'm you."
But the damage had been done, and O'Donnell was trounced in the general election. The following year, O'Donnell wrote a book about her experience and about the political views that she says got lost in the shuffle over the whole witch thing. Her book was called Troublemaker, and that's when I got the chance to meet her. Oh, and by the way, I talked with her the day after a contentious appearance on Piers Morgan's show on CNN, in which she walked off the interview.
Yes, but these issues are in your book. That's my point. Yeah. You do talk about them.
Okay. All right, are we off? Are we done?
He's still there.
I'm not. I'm still here.
He says he still wants to talk to you.
Well.
It would appear that the interview has just been ended.
You'll hear her talk about that in just a few minutes. So here now, from 2011, Christine O'Donnell.
I wrote it because, first of all, I wanted to set the record straight on a lot of mischaracterizations that came up in the campaign. And in the short amount of time that we had from the primary to the general election, there was just so much hoopla, to say it mildly, that people really didn't get to know who I am. And they just saw this mischaracterization painted by the media and by some of my own self-inflicted wounds, which are that stupid ad.
Well, all right, I was going to say, it must have felt like climbing up onto the railroad tracks, looking down and saying, "What a gorgeous view," and then turning around and realizing the train is upon you.
That's exactly what happened. And, you know, we were in this uphill battle with the primary that was continuing to pick up momentum because of the grassroots movement in Delaware. And we tapped into a discontent among the voters, and that's what propelled us to victory. But then right after we toppled the establishment, you know, we went from fielding a couple hundred calls a day, which we were thrilled about, to literally thousands of calls a day, you know, with the Japanese media and Al Jazeera and the Netherlands, you know, right outside our door. It's like, oh my goodness. And without the help of the Republican Party, which we did not have, the Republican Party in Delaware was so upset that I beat their anointed favorite that they just abandoned ship. And as a matter of fact, they were telling people to vote for my Democratic opponent.
Well, I mean, why wouldn't they? Because you didn't have any money. You'd never won an elective office. All you had was your principles. Why would we want somebody like you in office?
I know. Isn't that amazing? Mike Castle told that to Carl Cameron, and we're like, really? Oh, my goodness.
That was meant as an attack?
It sure was. Mike Castle meant it as an attack. And I'll tell you, what that does is it's proof of this obnoxious sense of entitlement that exists within the establishment. And in the book, I define the establishment as not necessarily an ideology and not existing within any one party. The establishment is a mindset that plagues all arenas, all political affiliations. It's a willingness and almost an eagerness to compromise your principles and a willingness to step on people in order for your own selfish gain. And I'll tell you, the establishment mindset is also in people who are still trying to work their way up the ladder. And it's a shame because it's that kind of mindset, that kind of elitist mentality that exists within the Lords of the Backroom that has brought our country to the brink of bankruptcy.
So I gather that one of the main purposes of the book is to encourage other, if you will, troublemakers to come forward and say, all right, I'm not going to play footsie with the boys in the back room. I'm going to run a, if you will, principled campaign.
Absolutely. And that's why I wrote the book in the way that I did. And in the writing process, I actually had some political advisors say, you know, you're being way too candid. You're being way too honest. If you ever want to run for office again, you might not want to say that. But I did it in such a way that I wanted the reader to relate to it. And I wanted the reader to recognize that, you know, this whole movement, the Second American Revolution, is about real people getting involved in the political process for the very first time, and real people have real problems. And I wanted the reader to read it and say, if she can do it, so can I. You know, and I wanted them to, you know, perhaps recognize themselves in it and, you know, to take away from the book that it's not about how many mistakes you've made. It's not about if you've fallen. It's not about what kind of opposition you're going to face to follow your principles. It's about if you own up to your mistakes and make amends. It's about if you get back up again after you fall. And it's about if you're going to find the courage, which is often hard to do, I know. And I talk about how difficult it's been at times. Find the courage to forge ahead. And I'm hoping that the book will serve as a clarion call and that the reader will then listen and put their name on the ballot or choose a candidate to get behind.
I found it interesting during the recent debt ceiling debate, there was a network correspondent reporting from Capitol Hill with kind of a quizzed sound in her voice. She said, some of these freshmen don't care about getting reelected. They're here to get something done, and you can't bargain with them. They don't want any pork. They don't want, you know, they don't care about it. They're here to get something done.
Absolutely, and people are astonished by that. But that's the problem. You know, we have too many politicians who put the next election ahead of the next generation. And, you know, what is wrong with demanding that there be some stopgap measures in place? And again, this is coming from both sides of the aisle. The Republicans had control of the White House. They had control of Congress, and they didn't fix the problem. Yes, as a Republican, I truly believe that the facts speak for themselves, and government grew out of control under Barack Obama. But guess what? A lot of Democrats do. You know, we have the CEO of Starbucks saying that he's a registered Democrat, but the economic problem, again, I'm paraphrasing, is because of the failed leadership of Barack Obama. So we need more people who are willing to step up and trust their common sense instinct and say, you know, what we see going on in Washington, these career politicians who have turned Congress into a favor factory, you know, enough is enough. This is wrong and we've got to stop it. So the beginning of the book is about who I am and where I came from, you know, working class background, father worked 3 jobs to make ends meet, and then, you know, didn't always, you know, have the right footing in my career path. But then also, you know, I talk about all the juicy details of the 2010 campaign and the witch ad.
Yeah, I was going to say, you really run down the checklist. All right, you're not a witch. Your house wasn't foreclosed on. You know what's in the First Amendment.
Right,
you know?
Right. I touch all of those issues. And then I close it with what I hope is some policy, what I think the solutions are going forward. And I tried to boil it down into layman's terms so that whether you're a Republican, whether you're a Democrat, whether you're an independent, I try to make a case for a smaller, simpler, limited government, the kind of government that our founders envisioned. And then I close it with some very practical application. If you've never voted, you've never been involved before, because I'll tell you, Bill, on the campaign trail, I would meet people who were in their 50s and 60s. I'm not kidding. A lot of people who never registered to vote. And it was the kind of mindset that, you know, I've gone on this long, and then there's this intimidation, you know, this factor of now I don't know what to do, and I'm embarrassed to go down to the Department of Elections and say I have to register for the first time, because they ask you, where were you registered before? And I write about that, and maybe some of the readers will relate with that, maybe they won't. But the thing is, get over it. Get involved. It's never too late. You know, if you're feeling the itch to get involved now, follow it. Doesn't matter where you've been. Doesn't matter how old you are. So I close the book with some practical application, and I really hope that the book serves its purpose and can empower the everyday American to get involved.
After this short break, Christine O'Donnell explains why she walked out of an interview.
Start your day with Now I've Heard Everything.
We post new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time.
Subscribe now so you'll have something fresh to listen to and get your day going.
Now back to my 2011 conversation with Christine O'Donnell.
This will be my only Piers Morgan question.
No problem.
Because the book is not about Piers Morgan. But you famously walked off the show last night. You know, it's, I'm sure, all over YouTube now, just right alongside the First Amendment and all of the, you know, the witch ads, things like this. You can be a YouTube sensation. I was on Piers Morgan's side if I thought that there was something specific in your book that he was asking you to recite, but I've read your book. I can't find this alleged passage that he wanted you to comment on. Did I miss it?
No, you did not miss it. And that's the thing is Piers spun it. I think he's desperate for ratings. He spun it to ask like I was afraid of his line of questioning. What he was not honest about in the clips that he released was that, first of all, we had already gone over the allotted time. So the interview was going on longer than it was supposed to. And normally that's okay. And this is okay now. But last night, we had a crowd of, I was supposed to be speaking at the Republican Women's Association in Manhattan. We had C-SPAN covering it. I was already a half hour late. The crowd was already beginning to get up and leave. So they're calling saying, where is she? Where is she? And he wasn't stopping. And then he decided to take it into a truly almost borderline creepy line of questioning. And I feel like I was a good sport when he, you know, replayed all the Bill Maher clips and replayed the ad and replayed all the MTV things. And I addressed it because I do address that. And I was a good sport. But then he wouldn't let up. And I'm almost embarrassed to say, but he wouldn't let up on the masturbation issue. And he started getting way too personal. So it's not that I was dodging his questions, but I thought that his questions were becoming sexist.
It's one or two lines out of a book of, what, 300 pages?
Exactly, exactly. And he would not let up. And here's the thing. The thing that I find very touching is that in the aftermath, I've had a lot of feminists, a lot of liberals, a lot of gay people come and blog on his website, post on his comments that his line of questioning was inappropriate, it was sexist, and you would never do it to a man.
I can't imagine him asking Harry Reid about that.
Absolutely not. And as I'm sitting there blushing on his show, like pretty much going, Piers, can we stop it? He's going, but you talked about it on MTV. It's like, okay, I don't want to talk about it now very clearly. And here's the thing. Would he ever say to Bill Clinton, you talked about Monica Lewinsky in the 90s? I want to know now. Do you still smoke cigars? Do you still hang around interns? He would never do that. So I was very proud and very honored the way that women came to my defense, women from all sides of the aisle. And it's a great thing. And they saw Piers for what he was.
In the 30 seconds or so that I have left, do you feel a closer kinship now when someone attacks Michelle Bachmann for not knowing that it wasn't Elvis's birthday or something like that? Do you feel a special sympathy for candidates like that now?
Absolutely, and even even Hillary Clinton, and I got in a lot of trouble from my conservative base for defending Hillary Clinton. You know, I was a pundit on the news, on the cable shows during the 2008 Democratic primaries, and I said that I admired Hillary Clinton for taking the blows and for enduring the inappropriate treatment. And you know, you have Barack Obama, you know, they'd say, oh, and this is what he said about his policy, and how about Hillary Clinton's hair last night, you know? And
And there's a relevant issue.
Exactly. But that's what they would do. Or they'd talk about her yellow jacket, or they'd talk about, was she too tired in New Hampshire? And you know, things that they would not do with a male candidate.
Except John Edwards, maybe.
Well, okay. The one. The one token. But yes, I do empathize with candidates for the grueling campaign trail and the demands that are on there.
Christine O'Donnell is 54 now. She writes a column for the Washington Times. Now you can get a copy of Troublemaker by Christine O'Donnell by tapping the link in our show notes or by going to our website, heardeverything.com. We may earn an Amazon commission if you make a purchase. Heardeverything.com is where you can also find my 1994 interview with another politician who knows something about foot and mouth disease, former Vice President Dan Quayle.
It was an unfair and untrue caricature that was developed in those first weeks of the 1988 campaign. But after that, there just was no incentive, no desire to go back in and to find out who the real Dan Quayle is.
And my 1998 conversation with longtime Colorado Congresswoman and one-time presidential candidate Pat Schroeder.
Where I found the most politicians getting in trouble is when they always start trying to deny something, straighten their halo, pose for holy pictures, and then the press is off to the war, you know, because they know.
And of course, we post new episodes of Now I've Heard Everything right here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts. And thank you so much for listening. Next time on Now I've Heard Everything, he's a very popular author, and he writes all kinds of fiction, long fiction, short fiction, poetry, screenplays, and he has a huge fan base. My 2006 conversation with Neil Gaiman.
I definitely get chided by people who think that I ought to stick to one thing and just do that. And I don't like doing that. I like being all over the place.
That's next time on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson.